It is good to be together. Welcome to the service of worship here in the chapel at Great Hucklow. It is my pleasure to be preaching here, my first time standing in this pulpit prepared to preach. I'm grateful to the members of Great Hucklow for inviting me to lead worship here this morning. It is good to be together. Let us come into worship with these words written by James Hobart. We come together not to celebrate our arrival at Journey's End. Rather, we assemble as a people ready to set forth for new lands. We come together not to celebrate our completion of the work at hand. Rather, we assemble as a people ready to take up new tasks. We come together not to celebrate our receiving a final truth. Rather, we assemble as people ready to seek deeper insights and intuitions. We share in common these convictions. Our accomplishment is found in the love of the journey, whose final destination no one has seen. Our satisfaction is found in the love of the work, whose final dimension no one has known. Our common wisdom is found in the love of the truth, whose final unfolding no one has described. Let us seek to be loyal and loving to one another, steadfast companions on the way. Together, let us seek to be faithful to the way wherein lies the journey and the work and the truth. It is good to be together this day. These words to light our chalice. We light this flame as a beacon of hope in a darkening world. May its light illumine the path which we travel together, so that we may see clearly and not stumble. I'd like to invite Jeff and Kate to come forward and help with our first reading this morning. It's from a book called How Can I Help? By Ram Dass and Paul Gorman. Now, I just need to make sure context is known here. Does everybody know what the Gallup poll is in the U.S.? It's a polling organization. Thank you. I'm glad you said that you didn't know, because I want to be sure everyone knows. It's a polling organization that has great high respect when they're doing a poll to find out what people think about things. The Gallup poll is the one that everyone refers to, and they do polling on a whole vast variety of issues, as you will find out from Paul Gorman and Ram Dass. You ask yourself what helping is, or who helps, or what helps, and how much, and when you are and when you aren't, and the whole conversation can get a little dizzy. What you're talking about is something you really understand instinctively, but the words can start to have a life of their own. Not that it isn't a wonderful topic, but there's always the potential for it all turning into the Tea Party from Alice in Wonderland. I get evidence of this in a phone call one day. I'm talking to a woman who is working for the Gallup poll. She's actually doing a poll on how much time people spend helping. She's trying to explain the criteria. I finally start to crack up seeing some of the absurdity in it all.
You are all crazy. How much time are people helping? What kind of question is that? Tell Gallup he's nuts.
She started to laugh as well.
I know, that's what I said too. What can I tell you? It's a job.
She was sort of whispering, which made me laugh more. We got into the conspiratorial, infectious laughter at it all. When I stopped laughing, I asked,
"What's that helping?"
She said,
"I guess so. Sort of. Why was it?"
I
said,
"That's your job. You tell me why."
And then I threw in,
"We were trying to make the best of a nutty situation. In fact, that's what I'm always trying to do." That's it. I want you to put me down in the Gallup poll as someone who helps all the time.
More laughter. She said,
we don't have a category for all the time.
Oh, ye of little faith.
But we do have a line here that says, all of the above.
At this point, I didn't know if she was kidding, but I went for it.
Perfect. Put me down under all of the above. I am very all of the above. In fact, put everybody down under all of the above. Everybody is trying to make the best of a nutty situation. Gallup can release a poll saying everybody in America is helping.
Ah,
she said.
I wish I had the nerve. Maybe I'll do it with alternate answers. One out of every two people in America is helping. The other half is being helped.
By this point, we were in love with the idea of throwing the topic back into blessed confusion, which is where it really is anyhow. Finally, we said goodbye.
It's been great,
I said.
Very helpful.
She agreed. Months later, there is a story in the newspaper. Gallup poll reveals half of all Americans help out as volunteers. Right there in the paper. She did it. She pulled it off. I rush into the kitchen, reading the headline out to my wife.
That's me,
I exclaim.
Which half?
Says my very formidable and wonderful wife.
All of the above.
I answer triumphantly.
Just wash the dishes.
She replies. Thank you. The second reading comes from author Rachel Naomi Remen, who is a psychiatrist and a physician. She is, in this excerpt, talking about a time when she was a pediatrician and as when she was the associate director of a clinic which had the responsibility to work with a group of adolescents who had diabetes. Their diabetes was the sort that needed to be controlled by both eating and insulin injections. And as happens in adolescents sometimes, we were all one at one time, they were rebelling and not taking care of themselves. To help them, she formed a couple of discussion groups of teens and their parents, though not in the same group, so one set of parents with a different set of teens. The groups became very important in helping the teens and their parents come to grips with what was happening until the director of the clinic discovered the groups and ended them. These are Rachel Naomi Remen's words. The director's indignation was painful. What was I thinking to overstep the limits of my expertise in such a blatant way? Was I a psychiatrist? That time she was not. What if one of these people had gotten hurt by something that was said or had become emotionally disturbed? What would I have done then? Despite the good results, the groups were disbanded. There is a very narrow conception of what a health provider is. Thinking back on those people and the wisdom, kindness, and understanding they offered each other, I am sad. We were not second-class experts. And having been ill since adolescence, neither was I. Our life experience was as valuable as any credential. I do not think that we will be able to attain health for all until we realize that we are all providers of each other's health, and value what we have to offer each other as much as what experts have to offer us. In the years since, groups such as these have demonstrated beyond question that problems which are not amenable to the most expert medical approaches may well be resolved in community by the very people who suffer from them and therefore understand them. In such communities, the concept of woundedness breaks down, and we are all wounded healers of each other. We have earned the wisdom to heal and the ability to care. In a recent talk, commentator Bill Moyers said that one of the most traditional values is live and let live. And this can never establish good health for all. Health requires us as individuals and as a people to go a step beyond this, to live and help live. This ends our second reading for the day. There's a scene somewhere in the trilogy of books that make up Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. There's a scene in which Zaphod Beetlebrox, a one-time president of the galaxy, has been tried for some unforgivable offense against someone and is sentenced to be put in the total perspective vortex. Now, if you are unfamiliar with this device, let me quote from the worldwide source of knowledge, Wikipedia. It's almost as good as The Hitchhiker's Guide, but not quite. From the Wikipedia entry on it, the Wikipedia entry says, it was designed by Trin Tragula in order to annoy his wife. Because she was forever nagging him for having no sense of proportion, he decided to invent something that would really show her what having a sense of proportion really meant. Unfortunately, the shock of being placed in the vortex destroyed her brain. But Trin Tragula's grief was tempered by the knowledge that he had been right and she had been wrong. In Adam's words, the total perspective vortex illustrated that, in his words, in an infinite universe, the one thing sentient life cannot afford to have is a sense of proportion. The total perspective vortex, you see, really does give you a sense of where you are in the whole universe, Douglas Adams tells us. When you are put in the vortex, you are given one momentary glimpse of the entire unimaginable infinity of creation. And somewhere in a tiny little mark, a microscopic dot on a microscopic dot which says, you are here. For most people, this experience was too overwhelming and their brains simply exploded. Knowing just exactly how small you are in the midst of all that is turning in the wide universe was much more than any normal person could manage. However, Zaphod, being the sort of fellow who is confident, came out of it unscathed, nibbling on a bit of fairy cake. He, unlike the rest of us, saw the microscopic dot on the microscopic dot and the words, you are here, and took it to mean that he was the most important part of the universe. After all, the vortex did note where he was located. It's not really the point at the moment, but it is worth noting that the vortex was disabled by Zaphod when he emerged. You see, it's the case that every atom in the universe is connected to every other atom in the universe, and anything can be used to extrapolate the whole of infinite creation. Mr. Tragula, when he built it, used a bit of fairy cake to start the vortex, and since Zaphod was nearly fainting with hunger when he finished his glimpse of everything, he plucked it up and consumed it without a thought. Now, fairy cake or not, I find that some days it feels like I've stumbled into that sort of vortex, and gaining total perspective is not a helpful thing. Our country, this country, is still reeling from the explosion of violence from 2 weeks ago, and the reverberations from those nights of rioting and looting and fires continues to be felt. Merchants and shop owners may well spend years trying to recover from their losses. Families who have lost their homes and the whole of their life's possessions may never truly recover from that trauma. Underlying all of that is the ongoing financial crisis, with the United States in precarious condition owing to the political battles that continue to rage, and the instability in countries around the world as the debts grow and grow. The poor and the vulnerable are left behind as supports are withdrawn. And the wealthy only accumulate more money, it seems. Many people we love, perhaps even people in this room, struggle to get through each week and worry about being left homeless, worry about feeding children. You don't have to look very much further to hear more of the bad news of the world. Norway, starvation in Africa as the drought there continues. In Somalia and in refugee camps in Kenya and Ethiopia, thousands of people are in danger of dying from starvation. And though aid is being sent, it is, of course, inadequate to the tragedy. Not to mention that it is also being diverted by conflict in that torn and weary country, that torn and weary continent. Murmurs come from Japan about nuclear contamination, and we worry about the people there and their losses. Climate change, wars that are never ending, and the loss of sweet, precious lives, soldiers, civilians, children, it would make God weep. The total perspective vortex. We might just call it television news or the internet. Every day there's a tragedy from around the world peering out from the screens, speaking from the photos on the front pages of the papers, the voices of the lost and the dead whispering in the static behind the smooth voices of the presenters on Radio 4. Gaining total perspective is not a helpful thing, especially when the tragedies are so great and our own resources are so small. I would guess that you've been in that place too, in that vortex, and the problem is that so often we do lack perspective. Caught up in the dramas of our own lives, and I mean no disrespect when I say that, we all have drama in our lives, and we have sadness, and sometimes we have pleasure that fills us, if we're lucky. Still, it all becomes so small when set aside the rest of all this. I have long known that around matters concerning social action and social justice causes, we can feel worn down by the enormity of those problems and by calls to be committed and to get to work on the issues. I know that when we are drawn into the work of healing the world by our hearts, when we hunger for what can be, then getting engaged, being involved, isn't a matter of forcing ourselves to do it, but rather stepping into what is right and what makes sense and what is good for us and for the world. Yet even then, it's hard to do, harder still to sustain. Today, I want to offer you some good news, though, some good news about all of this. It's true, it's absolutely true, that what is out there in the world is enormous and overwhelming, and there is more to do than you could ever possibly do in your lifetime of trying and doing and creating. And this is the good news. It is important that you find what you can do and that you do it. You see, the trouble with the vortex is that it can incapacitate us. Everything is so mind-boggling big, beyond us, beyond what we can accomplish. Yet I believe we are called to do more, to move beyond our limits, to truly find that one little thing that we can do to heal the world. I have long thought wistfully about the life of a nun I heard speak some many years ago now. She was telling stories about Advent and about awaiting Christmas, and recalled in this talk a year when she was able, at a moment's notice, to pick up and go to Cambodia for a humanitarian issue. As she talked, she reflected upon what was important for that season of waiting and the beauty of Christmas with her sisters in faith in the faraway land, remembering the small celebration in their tent, remembering the power there is in the freedom of going and doing real work, the real work of saving lives. What I was struck by was the entanglements that make such a mission seem impossible for me. And my wish that I had followed a path that would enable me to do that, to pick up and go where there is deep need, to make a real difference in the world. But it's not in my gifts to travel to Japan or to Africa or to any of the many war zones in our world. My life path hasn't taken me into places of power where I can have a direct impact on legislation that can change lots of lives for the better. There are days when it seems that I can barely keep peace within my own heart, much less make any more peace in the world. Yet there are things that any of us can do. Both our readings this morning offer reminders that there are ways that we can make a difference. Understanding the ways in which we do help in the world can shift that perspective vortex in a good way. The lift offered to someone in need, listening to someone in grief, a little money given to a charity that is making a difference. None of it is inconsequential. Raising a child counts too, no matter what part of that complicated job you play, parent, grandparent, supportive friend. There is truly a web that you join in weaving, a web of connections and care that you help in sustaining, and it makes a difference. Remembering that we are all part of the healing of each other and the healing of the world, as Rachel Naomi Remen suggests, also shifts that vortex. It isn't only the experts and those who hold the reins of power who can change the world. We are all experts in our own lives, experts on what it means to live in this world. And by doing that little thing that is in our hands to do, lives change. I say to you, lives change. I believe it. It's about the perspective, finally. Being able to see ourselves connected into that larger life that is going on, trusting and believing that what we can do, what we do, can change the world. It can save lives. We are well served by noting what Reinhold Niebuhr said back in the last century. He said, "Nothing worth doing is completed in our lifetime. Therefore, we are saved by hope. Nothing true or beautiful or good makes complete sense in any immediate context of history. Therefore, we are saved by faith. Nothing we do, however virtuous, can be accomplished alone. Therefore, we are saved by love. No virtuous act is quite as virtuous from the standpoint of our friend or our foe as from our own. Therefore, we are saved by the final form of love, which is forgiveness." Gaining total perspective comes not from that vortex of news, that swirl of tragedies and troubles that flow into our homes in so many ways. Gaining total perspective means remembering that we're all helping, we're all being helped, we're all living and helping to live. And remembering that we're saved by hope and faith and love and forgiveness day on day on day. And let us not forget that small bit of fairy cake. It is all interwoven, all connected. And even though it may seem in the darker moments that no act of kindness or compassion will ever make any real difference in the world, still each act is one with that whole of the infinity of creation and cannot be lost. Amen. Will you join me in a few moments of prayer, please? Spirit of love and life, thou who connects each to all, who weaves threads of connection through each atom, each act, each heart. In these few moments, may we be reminded of the whole of our lives. We move in a world that is sweet beyond comprehension. We live with grief unimaginable, sorrow and trouble that can seem unending. May we know that the good we offer, the kindness, the compassion, acts of mercy and justice which we enable, are never lost to the world. Encourage us, give us the strength of heart to offer what is in our hands to give and to respond in gratitude for all that is given to us. May it be so. Amen. As we prepare to leave these words by John Murray, you may possess only a small light, but uncover it, let it shine. Use it in order to bring more light and understanding to the hearts of men and women. Give them not hell, but hope and courage. Preach the kindness and everlasting love of God. So may it be with us all in the days to come. Amen.